Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Lord Onyx, and all the hosts 7 nights a week for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio. Terry's Power Hour, a show where we create our own reality. Thanks for joining us. So, pull up a chair and enjoy the adventure. And now, here's Lord Terry.
And good evening, everybody. Good afternoon, good morning, good wherever in the world you are. And whatever time you're listening, we are excited that you are with us tonight. This is the Reverend Terry Power, and you are listening to the Power Hours. And I am joined tonight by my partner in crime, my lady, love of my life. Robin, are you there?
Hi, honey. Yes, I am here.
Hey, darling. Now, of course, you're just in the next room because I managed to make it home tonight, barely.
Yes, well, through the snow. You needed a snow sled tonight.
Yeah, I needed Rudolph at a couple of points. I mean, it was flat out. It was ugly.
Yeah.
You know, I was just working an hour away on a job today, so I thought I would just, you know, slide on home tonight and have one more evening with the family, and that turned into a three-hour adventure.
to say the least.
But I survived, I arrived, and it's all good, and here we are tonight, so great fun.
I'm glad you made it home safe and sound. I was worried there for a little while. I'm especially glad because we had this big show we're doing tonight. We are starting a brand new series, teaching series. We actually have had a lot of people very happy with the tarot series that we were doing. And people have been asking, you know, are there other things that we could talk, you know, teach on the radio? And Terry and I put our heads together, and we came up with the idea that would be cool to just go over ritual and, you know, break down rituals and take a section of ritual for each broadcast. And I believe we will be doing these almost through the end of the year. So we will be posting a new schedule up with all of the classes, the dates, and so that you can refer to it. Where can they find that schedule, Terry, if they want to?
Well, as soon as I get it posted, it's going to be probably on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network page. It's going to be on Little Stone Bridge. And I'll probably go ahead and post it on my public figure page, the Rev. Terry Power HP page. So, you know, that's the places that it's going to be posted right away. And, of course, our regular posts will be coming out. But, yeah, I mean, the whole year is full on Tuesday nights. It's exciting.
Uh-huh.
You know, we've had a great response to the rituals.
Uh-huh.
mm-hmm. and the, you know, the live on-air participating in the rituals with us mm-hmm. format. And then, like you said, the response to the Fool's Journey through the major arcana of the tarot mm-hmm. has been mm-hmm. pretty well received. And
yes.
Yeah, you know, just it seemed like a natural progression to let's share more information. Let's take this venue that we have here and this amazing tool to share exactly how it is that we do what we do and how it's all broken down and what some of the stuff means, so that people can find their own way and go off and do ritual on their own, which is mm-hmm. really what a lot of us teach all the time, is that group ritual is never a replacement for personal, private communication with your manifestations of the divine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, I want everybody to keep in mind that what we're about to talk about as far as the ritual is based on my experience and Terry's experience in our personal practices and in the practices with our individual group. Terry came up through a large, I don't know how you would describe it, a large tradition. I came up through a family
tradition in a lot of ways.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Almost liturgical in a lot of ways. The tradition
okay.
I came
yeah.
up with.
Yep, yeah. So you're a little bit more formalized and stylized than I am. I'm a little more, you know, use what you got, laissez-faire, sort of hedge witch, kitchen witch, family trad. And so melding our two styles has been an interesting exercise in what we do. But this does not mean this is the only way to do it. That's not what we're saying. What we're saying is this is what works for Terry and I. And when I teach, when we teach students, this is what we teach. And it seems to work well as a good basis to be adapted by each individual to suit their personal needs. So, you know, we're going to talk about what we do as, like I said, a basis, a jumping-off point for you. It's not the end-all, be-all. I'm not saying that if you do it a different way that it's wrong. There is no wrong, nor is there a right way. So I don't want to get into letters from people saying, well, that's not the way I do it. You know, so.
But, and we're also going to talk a lot about different ways and
mm-hmm.
different meanings. But Robin's right. We have our own way of doing things. And we have, over the time that we have been together, kind of developed a style that works with our students, that works with both of us, as we become, as we kind of meld our ideas and our thoughts. So what we're going to be talking about in these shows in the coming months is, as Robin said, our experience, our thoughts, our ideas. We're going to try to help people to see how they can adapt that to their path.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of each show, we're still going to be talking about our path.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
We're not by any stretch saying that we've got all the answers, we've got all of
right.
our answers, and well, not even all of those because we're still looking. But
absolutely. Things are always changing and always in flux and always improving. The job of all teachers, as I see it, as my mentor told me, she may be out there listening this evening, as my mentor told me many, many, many times, the job of the teacher, the job of the head of your coven, is to, and your friends and other, if you're a solitary and you discuss your practice with other people, our job is to support and validate each other's experiences. So it's not my job to tell you how to practice. It's my job to support and validate the experiences that you have as your experiences. So your experiences may be different than mine, and that's all right. So
now your mileage may vary.
So I think the first thing that we should talk about, whenever you're going to plan a ritual or a spell working, and I'm going to explain the difference a little bit between spell working and ritual. A spell working can be done inside a ritual. A spell working can be the reason for the ritual. However, ritual and spell working can also be done separate from each other. So you can do, I'm in my car and I'm late for work and I'm going to get in trouble and I need all the lights to be green between here and work today, right now. Example of a spell where you're not actually going to cast full circle and, you know, have the whole rigmarole. You're just going to sit there and you're going to use your power energetically to make that happen. Or sometimes you're going to do, ritual just because you feel the need for that connection to the divine and not necessarily because you have any particular agenda in mind.
Just to celebrate.
Exactly, just to celebrate or just to have a mutual experience with others in, say, like a coven group, and maybe you're getting a coven group together, and you just want to see how the energy feels and is going to work together. You don't necessarily have to do a working inside the ritual, but you're there really to honor the elements and the gods. And we'll talk a little bit about that. People will probably be shocked saying, we're honoring the elements? We are. But we'll talk about that on the show of the elements. So you're going to first decide, okay, is this going to be a private ritual, a group ritual, or a very large public ritual? Those are three very different things that are about to happen. Private rituals are going to obviously be smaller and more personal. It's just you. There's usually some personal work you're going to do, you know, either for yourself generally, or, you know, for a close friend, a healing, whatever. If you're going to be working with your coven group, it could also be for working with somebody in the coven, something personal. It could be mutual working inside the group, again, for a healing or for somebody you all know. It could be for a common purpose like healing the earth. There are lots of things that it could be for. Now, a grand public ritual, when I say public, I mean there's going to be a lot of people in that circle you don't know. And there's probably going to be more than, say, 12 or 13 people. There's going to be 15 or 50 or 30 or 100 or 200 or 400. I have been at rituals, and I have participated in rituals with that many people in it. And it is a totally different experience. So that's the first thing you have to evaluate.
Well, and you're absolutely right. I mean, and how you're going to do things. Sometimes just the logistics of a large ritual change the flavor of it. Now, I really consider that our on-air rituals tend to be, we tend to run them as if they were large group rituals because we're bringing a lot of people, possibly from disparate tabs, all together and sharing an experience, and we tend to run them as if it was a large ritual, as opposed to a smaller coven ritual, where most of the people are following from very similar paths.
Yeah, and that may be another consideration when you're planning your ritual. Is this going to be a live in person holding hands ritual, or is this going to be a ritual that's going to include, you know, doing it over a medium like radio or Skype or telephone or however you're going to do it? You know, are you going to be using GoToMeeting or are you going to all be on the phone together in a conference call? All those things are possible, and sometimes, you know, technology is wonderful that way. It allows us to be with people we love and care about from a distance. So
yeah, I mean, that is certainly true. And the media, the internet has become such an amazing tool. And, you know, that's one of the things that I started working with before CERN. So I started using Block Talk Radio as a means of doing the public ritual. And, of course, when we started with CERN and started this station at midsummer, we launched with a midsummer ritual. So our very first episode on Spiritual Unity Radio Network was a ritual. I did that on purpose to set the tone. This is what we want this to be.
The internet internet rituals go back probably 20 years now at this point easily. So there's a lot of precedent. Whether it was everybody typing their part years ago, you remember that? Like IRC, you know, or later being actually able to all talk. You know, sometimes the ritual, I remember, would be in, like, an email list, and everybody would add a portion, you know, onto the email and keep sending it around. It was interesting. Okay, so the next, you know, the first step is to look at the need or want. Why are you doing this ritual? Why are you expanding yourself out to whatever it is that you need or want? What's the purpose? And if you are actually doing a working for a purpose, and you know, energy raising or whatever, you know, I need to get a job. I'm going to do a ritual to get a job. You have to examine your intent. Intent, I cannot stress this enough. Intent is everything. Have you run your intent through your ethical system? Whatever it is, whether it's, you know, the rule of three or the harm none or whatever it is. Doesn't have to have a name for it, but you've got to run it through your personal ethical system and feel, yes, I can do this without causing, you know, harm or horrible things to happen around me.
I think that's really what harm none calls us to. I mean, it calls us to a specific thought process where we do filter our intent through, you know, some form of ethics.
Yes.
And are we going to cause harm? Now, hurting somebody's feelings is not harm, and we could probably do another whole show on on harm. But I will, you know, completely agree with you that harm none and anything that we do like that, harm none calls us to evaluate the ramifications. I mean, try our best to look at the rule of unintended consequences. You know, I need $20,000. Well, then, you know, your great aunt dies and leaves you $20,000. Well, you know, you probably need to evaluate your, you know, your intent and narrow it a little bit, you know?
Yeah, and there are ways of doing things. You know, let's say you've got somebody at work who is driving you insane and you just can't work with them, and you need them to be gone. You're not going to do a spell to make them leave or to you know, say that, I want you to be gone. You're going to say, oh, maybe they get promoted, or maybe they move and they get a better job, or they get better offered a better job and move away, or, you know, whatever it is. They meet the man of their dreams or the woman of their dreams, and they move to another city and have a wonderful life. Yeah, you have to... Yep, you have to consider what you're gonna do. So once it's passed your ethical testing and your ethical examination of it, and sometimes it's good to bounce this off of a mentor at this point, to just as a check and balance if you're not 100% sure. You know, this is what I want to do, and these are my reasons for doing it. Am I missing anything? You know, do you see this as clearly as I do? You know, if you're comfortable with somebody like that, and this is why it's really sometimes great to be a part of a coven or at least a working group or at least a social group, a community, where you can talk to other people and reach out and get their input. So now it's time to set your intention. And as soon as you set your intention, you've made the decision, you're going to go forward with this spell working. You're going to set your intention as to what it is you need to do, and this is the point. And I hope you're all listening. this is the point at which the spell working begins. Because once you set your intention and you believe that you can accomplish this task through ritual and through the working that you're going to be doing inside that ritual, it has begun. People will argue this with me, and I will go around and around with them about it. But as soon as you have belief in something that it's going to happen, you've started the process of manifestation. Yes, and it will happen. So you're manifesting it.
And see, I even think that it goes before that. And I think that once we have the thought, we begin to create that reality. Now, how hard drive it, that's another issue. But the very thought of I should do a ritual, okay, at that point you have begun.
Yeah. Well, yes and no, because, you know, you may think about doing the ritual and then think, well, no, maybe I shouldn't do a ritual for my best friend's ex-boyfriend to have his penis fall off, because really it's not really, you know, good intent. Maybe I ought to just take a breath and walk away from that for a little while before I go doing that. So sometimes you might have a thought that it's a really great idea, but you have to kind of evaluate that first internally and make sure that it's something you want to do. So, because otherwise every random thought we had could be trouble. Now, the next step in my mind, and I know I'm rushing through this, but we have a whole lot of stuff to get through.
Right, and we do want to open the phones after the break, so.
Yes, yeah.
So it's good that we're covering everything in the first segment so that we can take calls after.
So after you've set your intention, your next thing is, how elaborate of a ritual am I going to be doing? Am I just going to get myself a candle and have a lot of, you know, personal reflection? Am I going to want to engage the people in the ritual, which is always best? Are we all going to light a candle together? Are we going to all plant a seed? Or what action are we going to do to represent our intention? And what am I going to do? Am I going to have, you know, the quarters set up with quarter colors? Am I going to have this big elaborate altar with flowers and God and goddess represented? And am I going to do the whole 9 yards? Am I going to get, how ceremonial am I going to get? And are we going to do the ritual sky clad? Have I talked to everybody about that? Is that okay? Or is that not okay? Are we going to be doing it at a large public gathering? Well, maybe I should consider how much time this particular thing I want to do is going to take. Because if I've got 50 people standing around in a circle and I want to go to each single, every one of them and let them plant a seed, how best is that going to be done so that it takes the least amount of time and gets it done as efficiently as possible? So how many helpers are you going to have? Is it more prudent to give them a seed in a little baggie with some dirt and say, go home and plant this, you know? And are you going to create those before the ritual, and who's going to help you? So there's a lot of forethought that needs to go into a big public ritual like that. If you're doing it with a coven, then you can sit down with your coven and say, hey, you know, this is what I'd like to do for this month's ritual, and you know, how can we facilitate this? This is what I'd like to do. Ask for input. Include other people when you can in the working and in how the ritual content is going to go, because they're going to become more invested. They're going to care more. You're going to ultimately raise more energy. The next thing you need to, the next thing that after you've decided what you're going to do and how you're going to do it and what you're going to use, I'm good to do ritual with very little. If I've got a candle and myself and maybe some incense, I'm good to go. But a lot of people need to have a big, you know, they want flowers on their altar, they want to have everything represented. It's everybody's different. I know, Terry, you're more ceremonial than I am. You like to have
stuff. I wouldn't say ceremonial, but I do like, I'm high church Wiccan. Let's just put it that way. I do like to have all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, am I perfectly comfortable sitting on a park bench and doing an entire ritual without you know, anything.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. All of the things that we use are keys to help us to shift consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Do I like to have all that stuff? Do I love to play dress up and have, you know, quarter banners and all of this stuff? I mean, Celtic Cross Temple, when we had the temple space, we had quarter altars and we had permanent ritual space, so it was a whole lot nicer. You could leave stuff set up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we had quarter altars and we had a tablecloth that was white that touched the floor all the way around the circular altar table, and then we would put runners for the different seasons. And we had, you know, we had that kind of, you know, opportunity. Is that necessary? No, I don't think so. I mean, I like it here, sure. I do love
mm-hmm.
to, I do love to have all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not necessary. I mean, we our, you know, ritual space outdoors here with the permanent altar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got the torches that were set up that were there always to light the torches as, you know, kind of as quarter altars.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we've also done it without them. So.
Right. Yeah, and so you can have as much or as little as you need. I do think, and this is one of those things that I will teach later, I do think that every person who decides they're going to set foot on this path has to learn to do ritual with nothing, only what they carry in their own body. And
that in their own visualization.
Yes, in their own visualization and their own being able to connect to deity and have energy and actually feel the flow of energy. You know, but that's, again, that's for a teaching later. But I just want to mention that there. Also, it's now time to decide what deity you're going to use, because if you're going to do something in a large public ritual, you might want to just call on the generic god and goddess. Or if it's a coven working or a group working, you might want to, you know, all talk about which god and goddess you're going to use for this ritual. What gods and goddesses do you have relationships with and are comfortable with? And are you comfortable mixing pantheons or not mixing pantheons? My coven, we mix pantheons all the time. Some people are freaked out by that and they don't want to do it. So you have to, communication is key here about which deities you're going to appeal to. And it's very important because it's part of what you're doing here is you're honoring the gods and you're asking them for help. And you're asking for their endorsement, if you will. So you've got your gods, you've got your accoutrement.
May I interject for just a moment? You touched on it, but I want to stress a little more the idea of with public ritual, where, again, you don't know who's going to be attending, you don't know the energies or the paths. Working with the archetypal energies allows each person to interact in a way that is personal to them without inflicting or, you know, imposing that on someone else.
Yeah.
So, I do believe that using the archetypal energies, the generic mother or the generic father or mm-hmm. maiden or hero or lover, whatever,
mm-hmm.
that energy is just as powerful whether you work with a specific deity or the archetypal energy. And
yep.
so that,
and
that
we,
works well with the larger group ritual.
Yep, and we will talk about that in depth during our ritual etiquette conversation that we're going to have in a couple of weeks, because there's a whole, I mean, I could do 2 hours easy just on ritual etiquette and things I've seen over the years, but we'll get there in a few weeks. So if you guys are interested in that, please come back and listen to that show as well. Okay, so now that we've got our tchotchkes that we're going to use in our ritual, we've chosen our deities, and please, folks, when choosing deity for ritual, remember balance. Please choose a female and a male to balance the energy in your ritual. I don't care who they are, but, you you know, it really does work better. Take my advice. You can try it with one or the other, but.
Now, we'll dig into that a lot more when we do the episode, when we do the portion of this broken down on deity. But one thing that I will interject or, you know, jump in with, Robin and I spend a lot of time teaching about balance now.
Mm-hmm.
There are people out there that have this idea that if we spend 2,000 years with this goddess-centric, that it's going to undo or whatever, you know, 2,000 years of this patriarchal. And it doesn't work that way. It's not a pendulum. We need to seek balance in every moment.
Yes.
And certainly in every ritual. So that balance of masculine and feminine is nature. We can't have one predominant over the other and nature work. So so we have
to. And that's
to
what we're trying to do is walk in
heart.
Harmony with nature. So.
So there we are. Sorry to interrupt. I know you were on a roll, but
that's okay. Okay, so now it's time to set the time and place and people who are going to be invited to the ritual or not. I mean, you may be doing a solitary ritual, and that's fine if it's just going to be you. But then you still need to set, okay, when am I going to do it and where am I going to do it? Am I going to walk out into the woods? Do I have a place in the woods that I go to? Do I do it in my living room? And what happens if I have it decided to do it in the woods and it rains? What's my backup plan? Am I going to go out in the rain and do it anyway? You know, I've done that. So,
yeah, it depends on the season, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It depends
on
where you are on the climate.
Yeah, if it's December in the Northeast and it's pouring rain outside, I'm probably not going to go outside. But if it's July and it's a warm night, I might. So depends. So you set the time. Excuse me?
The dancing in the rain is fun.
Absolutely. And everybody should channel that joy, even as an adult from childhood. So so you're going to set your time and place and people who will be attending and decide that if it's going to work for everyone and how is it going to affect you. And part of setting your time and place is when during the day. What time of day are you going to hold your ritual? Is it going to be at sunrise? Is it going to be at noon? Is it going to be at sunset? Is it going to be 1 o'clock in the afternoon? Is it going to be midnight? What time works for you and everyone involved? Some people get really carried away and want to know what the moon phase is. They want to know what astrological signs are where. They want to know is Mercury in retrograde? Is Joe's left foot behind his temple? You know, they really need to know everything that's happening before they can set their time and place. And that is up to the individual.
You know how we set the time for the rituals on the hilltop in Barbados?
How?
We determined what time of the evening the full moon would be visible in the clearing. Because we were on a hilltop, but we were surrounded by trees. And so we always set our rituals, and it's the same time. I mean, the full moon rises and, you know, peaks at the same time, you know, on a full moon every time. And what we would do is we would set our time so that the full moon had risen above the trees. And that was it. That was the entire timing of the ritual, was so that we were doing a full moon ritual with the full moon visible to us.
Right.
That's how arbitrary.
But, you know, some people insist on doing ritual in what are called the tween times, which again are sunset, midnight, sunrise, and noon. So some people are insistent about that. And so, you know, you have to go with what works for you. We used to do ritual on the beach in New Jersey when the moon would rise. So I would have to check the moonrise time. And you know, it was usually, depending on the season, because we did them year-round, usually within, you know, a two-hour window of each other. So, you know, we weren't in the mountains, but we were right at the horizon. And boy, it's nothing more beautiful than the moon rising over the ocean. I miss that living here now in the mountains.
Yeah. Well, darling, I hate to do this. I know we wanted to finish this before we got into the break, but we are at 34 minutes after the hour.
Yeah, I knew it was never going to happen.
It just wasn't going to happen. So what we're going to do is go ahead and take a short break and let Robin catch her breath. Because she has been flying through this.
I have been trying to.
And valiant effort to get all of this, the core material before we got to the break. And I'm in awe that you got as far as you did. But, so I'm going to let you catch your breath, and we're going to play a song. Those of you that have not heard already, we're going to be interviewing Wendy Rule Thursday night. And we're going to be interviewing a lot of people that will be appearing at Caldera Fest.
I am so excited to go to Caldera Fest.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a blast. And
we've been invited to come down.
Yeah, Pagan Woodstock. And we've been invited to come down, and we're going to have press passes, and we're going to introduce a couple of the artists. So we're really excited about going down and seeing a lot of these artists, meeting some new people, seeing some old friends. I'm looking forward to seeing Brad and the gang from Murphy's Midnight Rounders, and Utu, Dragon Ritual Drummers, will be there. So it's going to be a great deal of fun, and meeting some of the people we've interviewed. But anyway, in honor of Wendy Rule being on the show Thursday night, I've been playing Wendy Rule songs. So tonight we're going to play Dance of the Wild Fairies, which is possibly my favorite Wendy Rule song. And Afterfog will be so disappointed that he's not in the chat room tonight to hear it. But anyway, so we're going to play Dance of the Wild Fairies by Wendy Rule. Stick around. We'll be right back after this.
Where the vision is bright as spring. Come and dance. begin, you are caught in a trance, and the world can grow old in a single night.
Join us Thursday, May 26th through Monday, May 30th, Memorial Day weekend 2016, for Caldera Fest Pagan Music Festival. Join 29 of your favorite bands and musicians, including Tuatha Dea, Dave the Bard, Dragon Ritual Drummers, Wendy Rule, S.J. Tucker, Digis Christ Superdrum, and many more. Great music, great food, great vendors, and great workshops presented by the musicians themselves. Plus, the official CD release of The Green Album, a great collaboration album by many of the artists that will be at Caldera Fest. For more information, visit Caldera Fest on Facebook or go to www.calderafest.com.
You're listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thanks for sticking around. And now, back to the show.
And welcome back, everybody. This is Reverend Terry Power, and you are listening to the Power Hours. And I am joined tonight, as always. This has become kind of our standard, Tuesdays and Thursday nights together. By my lady, my love, my partner, Robin.
Hi,
I heard you made it back. I heard you.
I did. I'm here.
Yeah, so, that is my favorite Wendy Rule song of all time.
Excellent.
First time I heard that was she was singing it live at a Corellian event that I was attending back in 2011. And it was amazing to be in the room with her singing, and I'm so looking forward to talking with her Thursday night and to seeing her perform live again in Memorial Day weekend at Caldera. It's
going to
be a blast.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So
before the
we
break,
are still working on ritual
break,
prep.
Yeah, we were talking about ritual prep, and we've not even gotten around to the circle casting part.
Nope.
Maybe we should have done these as two different shows, because I'm thinking we may just finish ritual prep, and then I'll rework the schedule for the rest of the year. But because casting the circle itself is going to take a lot of conversation that we're not even going to have time for tonight.
Yeah,
so,
I think so.
So let's finish up with a discussion of ritual preparation, and I think you were just about to get into who is going to attend. We were talking about timing and that sort of thing before I just insisted we take a break. So
right. Yep, that's okay. So you've set the where and the when, the time and the place. Be mindful of the people that you're going to be having at Circle. Are some of them going to be children? Are some some of them going to be elderly who might need to sit down? Are the children going to be wandering in and out of circle? How is that going to affect your working? How you know, is that going to be something that you're going to want? Be clear with the people in your group about what's acceptable behavior and what's not. We here at the Mountain tend to have a very permeable circle because we have a lot of children, and children have the, you know, attention span of a flea, especially with a two-year-old. And, you know, if you've got children that young, they're going to wander. And I don't think rituals should be a thing like, you know, oh, stand right there and don't move. I want kids to participate. I want them to bring that joyful, youthful, fey spirit energy. And it's in my circle, so I'm not going to try and oppress them in circle. I want them to be there and express that and do their thing. So if they feel they need to, you know, wander in and out, that's fine.
But do be mindful of the link to the ritual. Yeah.
Yes.
Be mindful of that, because if you're going to have kids wandering in and out. That's great, and we love the energy of the kids. And I always have. I've always thought that the children wandering in out of circle was, children and animals wander in and out of circle all the time.
So if that's the case, you just need to take that into account and know that your circle is going to be probably much broader than it would be than if you were just, you know, 12 adults. So.
Yes, and be mindful of the length of your ritual.
Yes.
Kids are going to get bored, and people who have some seasoning may need to sit down, or may just not be able to endure a marathon ritual.
You also need to decide, is this, you know, if somebody has to go to the bathroom for example, are you going to require them to be cut out, or is, you know, the bathroom close enough that you can include it in the circle space? So these are all things to think about, the practical things. Now, if you're doing a ritual for a group or a large public ritual, you're going to also want to have some sort of theme to your ritual, a look to your ritual. Whether it's 12 people or 200, people are going to have to know, oh, this is where the ritual is. So some of the things that you're going to have to consider, again, how many people, the comfort of the attendees, where are you going to be casting your circle, how broad, and please, let me just say a word about this. We've talked about this before on the air. If you want people to participate in your circle, when you cast your circle, it must be outside the ring of people so that the humans who are participating in the ritual are inside the circle, not inside the people. Now, we're going to talk about that one and physically how to cast circle in the next show, and how to make sure that happens. I've been to too many rituals recently where people are doing this part incorrectly, and they are essentially creating theater, because everybody who they think is participating in the circle has now been locked out, essentially, of the circle.
Yeah. So while there's no right and wrong, there are some definite things to consider. And if you're doing theater, on the round, okay, well, then do theater. But if you're doing a participatory ritual, you might want to include the participants inside the circle.
One more thing I'll say. If you're doing a public ritual at an event and you're anticipating a lot of people, and you as a group are not comfortable handling the energy of all those people, which is your reasoning for wanting to do the circle inside and exclude all these people from your ritual, then you shouldn't be doing that ritual. Then you go find somebody who is comfortable with doing a ritual with all of those strangers or, you know, untested energies in circle. That's just my opinion. Send your cards and letters to CERN, Ed.
Yeah, we look forward to your letters. CERN.org at gmail.com. But don't be afraid to ask for help.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know, I mean, Robin and I grew up and developed along somewhat parallel lines, and
mm-hmm.
both of us throughout our careers had a lot of people to help us.
Yes.
And people we could turn to. And we both, in our own ways, in our own groups, made
mm-hmm.
use of that help. It
well,
is not
you know
a
what?
Sign of weakness to ask for help. It's a sign of strength and respect for others to ask
mm-hmm.
for help.
And I'll be honest with you, in some ways, it's the easy way out. And I acknowledge that, and I celebrate it. I would rather learn from other people's experiences and successes than have to regret my own mistakes. So if you have access, like that spin, I learned that from you. If you have access, as I have always been fortunate enough to have elders in the community, because I got out there and I organized events and I met people and I became a part of my local community. And actually, for those of you who don't know this, that's why I live where I live, is my elder lives next door. From part of my community. So I have access, even now, when I'm not sure about something, I call her up or I walk next door and I say, hey, what do you think about this? I will never get to a point, probably, for as long as she is on this spiritual, physical realm with me, and probably even when she passes into the spiritual realm, hopefully a long time from now.
Becomes one of our ancestors.
Yeah. Yep, I will probably still be talking to her from on the other side because she's been so invaluable to me. I have many people, I'm very fortunate, I have many people in my life like that. Good friends, people who are my same age but whose opinion and practice and input I value. Seek out those people. I said this to you earlier. Seek out those people and don't be afraid to ask for advice. Don't feel that on this path you have to know everything. We never know everything until we pass into the next incarnation on this journey. In this life, in this physical realm, we never know everything. And to
give, we wouldn't need to incarnate.
That's right. And to not reach out to people who have had other experiences and get input from many different perspectives, that's failing ourselves and failing our gods. So, enough said. Okay. Let's see. I'm trying to figure out where I am here in my notes.
Well,
theme.
I think it's about time. You mentioned theme,
mm-hmm.
and I think we're going to be just about at the point of entering the circle area. And
Well, I have a few more things to mention. You're
rushing
me along. So we touched on considering other people's paths when creating rituals. So not everybody honors the same deity, you know, inside the coven. Perhaps you've got to work that out. Also, we talked about using archetypal energies. You know, God, goddess, mother, father, maiden, and crone, rather than specific deity if it's a large public ritual. Do not, no matter how tempting it may be, no matter how much people whine and ask for it, do not write parts for people to read in your ritual. Make them speak their parts from the heart. You can certainly discuss with them the intention of the ritual and discuss with them what it is you're trying to achieve. It does not have to rhyme. I hope you all heard me. It does not have to rhyme. It's pretty if it does. It's really nice, but it does not have to rhyme. when you hand somebody in ritual a piece of paper and say, here, read this, you have just taken all the intent and energy and magic out of it. Because people cannot let the energy flow while reading someone else's words. I don't even like it if they've written it themselves and they want to read it in circle. If it's so long you can't memorize it, don't bring a piece of paper in. Speak from off the cuff. It will be much more powerful. It will raise much more energy. Don't be afraid that you're going to say something wrong. There is no such thing. The gods know what's in your heart, which goes back to the very first step, which was evaluate your intent. Okay, so now you have to, before you're going to do a group ritual with either a coven or a bunch of solitaries working together or a large public ritual, you need to have about 5 minutes of preamble in which you explain what you're going to be doing, what the purpose of the ritual is, what things you're going to call. We're going to call northeast, southwest. We're going to call this god and goddess. This is the reason we're doing this ritual. And anybody have any questions? And here are the people who are participating. And that's all it has to be, 5 minutes of just explaining to people what they're about to participate in. It's just polite. If you invite people over to dinner, you don't say to them, oh, yeah, I'm going to make dinner, but I'm not going to tell you what I'm serving. You say, well, we're going to have roast beef and we're going to have carrots and, is anybody allergic to, mashed potatoes? Because I'm making mashed potatoes with garlic in them. So it's just polite. Same sort of thing. Also, before you commence casting circle, there are logistics to consider. Things like setting up where your quarters are, know where east is, know where south is, and set up some sort of demarcation, even if it's just a person standing there, to say, this is south, this is north. And then create a gate. Classically, the gate for entrance into circle is in the east, according to most traditions. Some traditions it's in the north. Some traditions it's in the south. So it depends on your tradition. Some large rituals will have four gates, and people will come in through each gate just to facilitate time. And at each gate, or at the main gate, you want to have representatives of the group greeting people into circle. If it's a small group, you want to have the high priestess and the priestess. They are going to have been smudged and anointed first, and they bring people into circle. Whether you're doing, the classic, how do you enter circle in perfect love and perfect trust, or whether you're just giving them a hug and saying, welcome to circle, it doesn't matter what you do as long as you're there as the high priest and priestess to engage the people and sort of welcome them and make them feel warm and fuzzy from the moment they walk into that circle and let them know that you're there with them with a purpose. And it also gives them one last chance to ask a question or make a comment about ritual because they're standing in front of you one-on-one. Anything you need to throw in there?
No, I do in the preamble section where you're talking about getting mm-hmm. particularly the participants and the people who are going to be calling quarters and doing invocations or evocations. I like when it's possible to get everyone together and say a short prayer amongst the group. And, you've heard that one that I like to use, mm-hmm. the sweet gods and goddesses give us the right words to say.
Mm-hmm.
That sets the tone, particularly for the ritualists, to help them to understand that we are there. Very often words are going to come to us that's not what we intended to say, and that's okay. It's what we're being fed. And when we open ourselves to that, then ritual becomes a deeper experience for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do like that as a part of the preparatory phase of the ritual with, you know, getting the ritualists together.
Yeah.
That was the one thing I wanted to add.
Okay. Now, I kind of glossed over that the high priest and priestess should be smudged and anointed, if that's what you do in your in your tradition. For years, I've talked about this before. We did full moon circle, open full moon circle, so it was new people every time on the beach in New Jersey. And if you've ever done ritual on a beach, you know you can't keep a candle lit. You can't keep smudge lit, you know, a sage stick. You can't. There's nothing that you can use that is a fire that will stay lit on the windy beach. So what we did was we just went down and we dipped our feet in the salt water. And I would, you know, pick up a handful of the ocean water and sort of like rub it on my face and forehead. And that was our way of cleansing, washing our hands in the ocean, washing our hands and feet in the ocean. And then we would come back up onto the drier sand and have ritual. So find something that works for you in the space that you're in to make that happen. You've got to have some sort of symbolic cleansing. The anointing with oil.
The entry point you mentioned, sometimes the entry point's going to be determined by the ritual space, not by whatever we want to do.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's okay as well. Sometimes the geography of the space is going to, you know, create limits on which direction you can enter from.
Yes.
So.
It doesn't really matter. Yeah, it doesn't really matter which spot you people enter into, other than sometimes it can be a way of honoring that particular direction. Or element, depending on where you are geographically, the directions may be different, may represent different elements. Like if you're in Australia, north may be fire, and then south is earth. If you're standing on New Jersey and you're looking at the ocean, and that is in the east, for me, years and years and years for me, east was water. Because I was not going to turn to the east, standing on the beach, looking at the ocean, and call air. It just didn't feel right to me. And now living on the mountain, I still want to turn to the east and call water, but, you know, I only do that in my own personal practice because that's what I'm used to. It's what it works for me. But when we do group ritual here, I consider what everybody else is used to, and so we call east is air. So,
and we'll talk about that in a couple of weeks or a couple of months.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. So now you have smudged and cleansed. Should we talk about why that's important? Because I really didn't mention why it's important.
To cleanse and anoint?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very briefly, because we are at the top of the hour.
Okay, well, why don't you give us your thoughts on it first, since I've been doing most of the talking this evening.
Well, you've been doing a great job, and I've just been, you know, throwing in my two cents. whenever I could get a word in. To me, the cleansing is to put away negative thoughts and to, just generally cleanse any junk that we carried around with us or picked up along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And the anointing is to make holy. It is a mini consecration in and of itself. And when something or someone is anointed, they are set apart. And it is an indication that we are doing something that is not part of the everyday.
Mm-hmm.
And while you and I do live a magical life, and a lot of people we know live a magical life 24/7, that set aside time, that set aside action that is done just because it is separate and holy, is definitely something that reminds us to have that separateness, that connection to the divine, and that separateness from the workaday life. So anointing sets something aside, sets it apart. And so I've always liked the idea of anointing coming into the circle, because it puts us in a mind that we are doing something with the gods, not just hanging out with our friends.
Yeah, one of the ways I usually will describe this to students when I'm talking to them is that when you smudge and you're using the sage or sweetgrass or cedar, whatever you're going to use to smudge with, it prepares you mentally for communing with the gods. It helps you to release a lot of the tensions of your day, get rid of a lot of the junk, like you said, that you carried along, and it prepares you mentally and spiritually for that communion with your gods. The anointing, in my opinion, prepares the physical vessel that your spirit dwells within for the same thing, but they're two separate things. First, you're doing your spirit, you're cleansing your inner spirit, and again, it, for me, represents the female and the male, in that first you would use the smoke, the ethereal, to cleanse the feminine aspect, which is the internal, intuitive spirit, and then you are now anointing the physical body with oil, and in some sort of liquid. It could be holy water. I mean, like they do when you go into Catholic Church, first thing you do as you walk into Catholic Church, right, you dip your finger in the holy water, and you put a little cross on your forehead, and you walk down the aisle, and you kneel, and, you know, say hello to your God, and, you know, bow your head, and then you go sit in the pew and say your prayers or whatever it is that you're going to do in church, whatever. So in a lot of ways, it's the same. And for me, the anointment represents the physical realm and the physical body. Does that make sense?
Oh, it does. It does. And that's one of those places where we have a little bit different ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But the blending of the two has worked well for us. You know, we both see an inherent value. And like you said, it prepares the vessel. And I'm, you know, indicating to me, I think of it as a consecration of a sort, the same way we would consecrate a ritual tool.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, well, I mean, we're looking at it from different sides, but we're looking at the same concept.
Yeah. Yes,
we're preparing ourselves for something holy rather than something mundane.
Yes. So, how are we doing on time? Because I am not sitting near a clock.
Oh, we are 7 minutes after the hour.
Ah, okay. Well, you know, we're pretty much
running late.
Yeah, we're pretty much at the point where you've done everything you can do, and the next thing is to just have everybody enter circle, and you would, at this next point, begin to cast your circle, which apparently is going to be our next class on this.
That's going to be in about 3 or 4 weeks. So.
Yep. So look for those announcements if you're looking to follow this thread, if you will, this class thread. Look for those announcements. And remember always, please, that if you miss one of these classes, you can always look back in the archives on Blog Talk Radio and download it. So you don't have to panic if you can't be at your radio on Tuesday night at 10 because your coven is having a meeting. You can come home. And these episodes are available about 10, 15 minutes after we sign off.
They're available forever.
Yeah, exactly. You can always you can always go back a year, 2 years, and see what you need. So that was why we thought this was such a great resource. Yeah, exactly. And that was why we thought this was such a great resource. They will be here forever, all these teaching things we're doing about the tarot. What card did we just do, the Hermit?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep, the tarot card. You know, we've done all these tarot cards. So if you listened to the Hermit show the other night and you really got a lot out of it and you want to go back and listen to the other cards, you can do that. And you can always also write to us and ask us questions. You can call in to the show anytime that we're on the air and again, ask questions. You can also get into the chat room through Blog Talk Radio. You have to set up an account, which takes like 2 minutes, and get into the chat room and ask us questions in the chat room live on the air as well. So don't feel that you can't access us or contribute or ask questions when we are doing these teachings. We hope to hear from you guys out there, and I look forward to meeting you and speaking with you. So, Terry, why don't you remind our listeners how they can get a hold of us otherwise? I always do it. It's your turn.
Yeah. The easiest way to find or to send questions directly to Robin and I is to use our shared email address, which is littlestonebridge@gmail.com. And that will get to both of us. Whoever checks it, if it's a question for both of us, we'll let the other one know that we both checked that email address. Let's see. You can also find the Little Stone Bridge Pathworkings Facebook page and get some ideas as to what we're doing. The Spiritual Unity Radio Network Facebook page has been primarily used for announcements of the shows and such, but we're also going to be putting up the calendar, schedule of shows. We're working a lot harder at getting stuff scheduled further in advance so that we can actually run an ongoing schedule so you can see a few weeks in advance what we're going to be talking about. And then my personal friend's Facebook page is Terry Power. Look for the one that is in North Copley, Pennsylvania. And it also says something about the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. There are more than one person with that name. So make sure you find the one in North Copley, Pennsylvania. Or find the public figure page, Rev Terry Power HP. Or follow me on Twitter, @RevTerryPowerHP. And the last thing I wanted to say is, we mentioned the email address earlier. If you want to write directly to the station about station business, you can also email surn.org@gmail.com. But it's usually easier to at least copy Little Stone Bridge because that helps us to know that we've got something there to look for. So then, Robin, you've got a couple of Facebook pages as well.
Mm-hmm. You can reach me on Facebook on the Spiritual Wellness Physical Health Facebook page, which is my Monday night show here on CERN. You can also reach me on the Little Stone Bridge Pathworkings Facebook page, which is the Facebook page where if you were interested in having Terry and I or Terry or I come and speak at an event or teach or come and you wanted to come to the mountain for a ritual. We're going to be having an interesting event this spring, I think, in that we're going to have a day, an evening of fairy watching. We're going to be sitting and looking for fairies. But so if there are things that you're interested in, you can always write to us at that Little Stone Bridge Pathworking page. And that's a good way to get in touch with me or Terry. And also my personal page is Robin A. McKean. And feel free to PM me there. And I will, of course, answer you. And fortunately, I am the only Robin A. McKean, I think, out there. So.
Yeah. Yeah, you are more, your name is more unique than mine.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think only because I put
that,
my middle initial in it.
Yeah, well, I used to have my middle initial in it, and everybody thought it sounded pretentious, so I quit doing it. But anyway. That's another story for another time. Right now we are at 15 minutes after the top of the hour, so it is past time for us to say goodnight to everyone and to wish you all a week filled with love and with wonder. Good night, everyone, and blessed be.
Blessed be. Good night.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.